Welcome to OK Sis Podcast.
Hi, sisters. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Scout.
And we are sisters IRL.
I'm the older one.
Yes, Scout. We know.
We're cultural observers.
And of curious minds.
Get ready for sisterly banter while we chat about fixations, learnings, and personal growth.
We promise it'll be a good time.
As long as you don't get too loud, Mads.
Welcome to the sisterhood. Welcome to OK Sis. My name is Maddie.
Oh my God, that was like a 60s, like vintage radio. Hello, I'm Scout.
Was it?
Oh, it was. I am the older sister. We are sisters, IRL, and we co-host this wonderful, beautiful, informative, inspiring, fun, relatable podcast.
Whoa, give me one more.
Aspiring?
Nope.
Where trendy. Is that? Trendy.
Trendy. Trendy. What's up, guys? Welcome to the pod. Something just absolutely absurd happened to Scout right before we hit record. So Scout, would you like to reenact what just happened to you?
Yeah. So oh my God, this is so terrible. So 2 days ago, which was, we're recording this on a Friday, so it was Wednesday, was inauguration day. For some reason, me and our stepbrother were watching like a video for my wedding. And then I texted my friend about it because he was in the video. And then he just texted me back today. He's like, oh my God, is it your wedding anniversary? And I stopped and I looked at the calendar. Guys, yesterday was my wedding anniversary and my husband and I completely forgot. Like, it completely missed our, like, and we even talked about it last week. We were like, what should we do for our wedding anniversary? And we actually have date night planned tomorrow, but that date night was not top of mind. It was not supposed to be an anniversary dinner.
This is a sin. Like, the joys of life are anniversaries, okay? A marking of a big accomplishment and a celebration, a reason to continue the celebration year after year. And you have deprived, you guys have stolen that from your life cycle. And I am appalled.
My friend is real life texting me right now. Oh my God. Wait, what? You guys forgot with like 10 question marks. But you know what? Something must have been in the air because last night I was putting on all these like 2000s music and I had a face mask on and You're Beautiful by James Blunt came on. So Adam and I slow danced Silly and Weird with Luna in between us to the entire song of You're Beautiful by James Blunt. And I sang it to him, but I changed the lyrics to I'll never be with you to I'll always be with you.
I'm gonna vomit. What just happened? I'm just kidding. I do that with Ben as well. We just do like little slow dances in the middle of the day. Oh, look how cute we are.
I can't believe this is my third wedding anniversary and I didn't even post a picture on Instagram. I mean,
if you didn't post a picture on Instagram, did it really happen?
I cannot believe that we forgot our wedding. Although, you know what? Let me tell you this. So Adam and I have been together for like almost 8.5 years. And so for 5 years, our anniversary was in September. And so it has never fully gotten into my mind that our anniversary that we celebrate now is in January. You know what I mean?
So wait, I have a marriage question. Do you then disregard the September anniversary or do you celebrate both?
We don't celebrate the September anniversary, but we say like, oh, babe, 8 years together today. Like we acknowledge that that is a time marker in our relationship, but we are supposed to,
celebrate the wedding one.
Yes. Yes. We're supposed to do something.
I would just like to acknowledge, you know, I always make it about me this time of year. So this is the 3-year anniversary. I can't believe I forgot. The 3-year anniversary of the most snatched that I've ever looked in my life. Like the best I ever looked. I will never look that way again. If you guys want to see a photo, maybe I'll post a photo in honor of your wedding anniversary of how fucking good I looked. And, you know, every year this time rolls around and I'm just like remembering just how snatched I look.
Remembering the best weekend of our lives. Truly.
The best weekend of our lives.
Truly the best weekend of our lives. I should post a slideshow. I should post my wedding video.
Why
to my Instagram.
Let's go down memory lane. Where was it? Paint a picture for us.
Okay, so I got married January.
Oh, wait. First. What date was it?
Yeah, date was it?
So this is actually, we should definitely post your wedding video because do you know that to this day, I still watch it like to pregame?
Yeah, it's an epic video.
I still watch it. Like, if I just want a good cry, I'll watch it. Like, I was in Joshua Tree with my friends. We all got COVID tested and went to Joshua Tree, and we watched it.
Yeah, you tell me that you pregame to it constantly. So my wedding video is actually one of the best wedding videos, I think, to ever grace this world. Shout out to the Hubs Film, HUBS.
They're doing mine.
Yeah, if you're in Southern California, hit them up. They're a husband-wife duo and just really, really amazing. So yeah, why don't, when this episode goes live, let's post my wedding video. But anyways, I got married January 21st, 2018 at the Parker Hotel in Palm Springs, which, if you are unfamiliar by the Parker, it is this magical Alice in Wonderland type hotel that Jonathan Adler decorated and did all the interior design for. And I got married on the Gene Autry lawn, which is like a fucking football-sized lawn, and we had a beautiful canopy of lights, a white dance floor. It was the most magical, magical day. We had the Gene Autry house, which a lot of people don't know, at the Parker Hotel. There's actually a house on the property. And so we rented out the house for two nights, where Mads, me, and my sister-in-law Kristen stayed the night before I got married. And the whole thing was like, everyone was crying. Everyone was just bawling all day. Everyone. And then one of my best friends, Micah, made a speech, which is what I was watching 2 days ago, and unbeknownst to me that it was my wedding anniversary. He made a speech, and he surprised me with the Gay Men's Choir of Palm Springs, who came out and sang Seasons of Love at my wedding.
It was spectacular. I'd love to give some of my memories of that weekend. Number one, did not sleep the night before your wedding. Not one wink. Not
Why?
One wink. I don't know. I just did not sleep. And I was so nervous that I wouldn't be able to poop in the morning, which is, you know, a very big thing for me. I don't poop when I'm like not in my comfortable space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you travel,
yes,
I'm sure
yes,
people
all of us,
will
all
relate
of us.
To this. Okay, thank you. You look like you were looking at me like I was fucking weird.
I know, but that's just actually, you're right. That was like a really major concern of us the night before. We were talking about whether or not like we
oh,
were
I
talking about
move.
It.
I brought laxatives. I brought Smooth Move. I brought it all. And thank God I did. I did. Yes.
I remember you, me, and Kristen were like, yes, yeah, score. We did it.
Woo! Like, we got coffee. We got the laxatives. We were done. We were great. Mm-hmm. Another amazing memory that I don't know if you know. So there was the rehearsal dinner, right? It was the night before.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was at that house that you just mentioned. And Ben and I, my boyfriend, snuck
off. Oh my God.
To have,
did you
sex
have sex
during. Yeah.
But where? Like in my bed?
No. In like my hotel room.
Oh, I don't give a fuck. I thought you like had sex like in my sacred marriage bed.
Oh, of course not. But what I'm saying is, like, we literally left the party in the middle. It was like legit the middle peak of the party. And we left and came back. And not one person knows, except for your friend Austin, who saw us leave.
Oh, except for now everybody that's listening to this podcast.
It was a great moment.
Yeah. The rehearsal dinner was amazing. Like, Friday night, we all went to a Mexican restaurant for Shabbat dinner. Saturday night, we had the rehearsal dinner at the Gene Autry house, which was very 1960s vibes, old Hollywood, like vintage, mid-century, modern, Frank Sinatra stuff.
Okay. Your adjectives these days are just, like, the list is a little too long.
Oh, I'm just trying to be, you know.
Thorough.
Descriptive. And then Sunday, since Jewish weddings are on Sundays and not Saturdays, we had the whole wedding day, and then we had brunch Monday morning at Norma's, and it was the most, goddamn, it feels like so long ago. Like, I know 3 years isn't that long, but it just feels very long ago.
Yeah, it does feel like a different lifetime. Well, happy anniversary to you too. You guys are marriage goals, still going strong. Any advice for the newlyweds, the recent newlyweds that are listening, or no?
I mean, getting married doesn't really change too much of the day to day, except the one thing I will say that is different, and I can't even remember a time where this wasn't, is that finances are combined.
Okay, this is boring. This is not sexy. What's like it's like the love stuff, like how to keep it sparky.
Like, for me, the little thing is that every time I see him or greet him, whether it's in the morning or when I come home, it's always like, even if it's 5 seconds, I put my love into it. Like, I give him a kiss and a hug, and I, you know, say you look handsome, or I'm so happy to see you, just like little stuff like that, that adds up. So like every time we re-meet when he comes home from work, I'm like, babe, hi, how was your day? Like just making sure that whenever we come together, whether it's in the morning or if he leaves to run an errand and comes home, it's always kind of like a cute little special 5-second moment when we get reunited.
So tender. So sweet.
Yeah. So anyways, epic fail on my behalf and his behalf. He hasn't texted me back yet. I wrote in all uppercase, babe, we forgot our wedding anniversary yesterday. Oh my God. So we'll see what he was. We just love each other so much that we just love every day. We love every day together.
Oh my God. Also, every day is an anniversary.
Also, it's like COVID. I can't like go make a nice reservation.
Right. It makes sense that it slipped your mind. This year doesn't count in terms of celebrations.
Okay, enough about me and my marriage goals situation. We have a virtual live event coming up on February the 6th, and it's going to be fucking amazing. We have two incredible guests, Brittany Xavier, which you might know. She is kind of like an OG fashion influencer, an amazing mom. She has risen in the ranks on TikTok this year, and I kind of look to her as an example that someone my age can have a thriving TikTok career, because she's so ridiculously good at it, but she's also very similar in age to me, so I feel connected to her in that sense.
Right. She is definitely the leading millennial on TikTok for sure. She's been able to tap into that market. So we'll be asking her all the questions about that. And then the other guest that we have is Natalie Maraduena, who is David Dobrik's assistant. We chatted with her last week, which was so exciting. She is just, it's going to be such an amazing conversation, all about self-care, body positivity, making sure, you know, how to even run an operations of a successful YouTube channel, and things that she's done with David, apart from David. So if you are big fans of the Vlog Squad, you will not want to miss that conversation. And
because at the end of these interviews, we also have 10 minutes of Q&A, so you will get a chance to ask Natalie and Brittany questions. And what would be an OKSYS event without a mental health situation? So do you want to talk about our mental health panel?
Yes. So we are having Meadow from The Local Optimist, which is Mad Happy's publication on mental health. She is going to come in and do a presentation. So Meadow will be conducting this workshop with us, and it's going to be very interactive. We're going to have you guys participate. You know, it's going to be just such cozy vibes. Everyone, the attire is pajamas because it is a sleepover, and we're just going to have matching sweatsuits galore and tea. And then if you want mimosas, like, that's okay too.
So the date and time is February 6th. That is a Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Zoom, so we can all safely be together. And if you want to get tickets, they're $20. You can get them at the link in our show notes below, or if you go to our Instagram at OKSYS Podcast, the link in our bio has the ticket event as well, or our secret Facebook group, OK Sisters. And we can't wait to see you there.
Can't wait. All right, so this episode is a topic that we actually have not explored on the podcast yet, and I'm very surprised that we haven't, but we have the founder and CEO of the Alliance for Eating Disorders Awareness on today. Her name is Joanna Candel, and a complete gem of a human being. Let's just get that out of the way. A mother, a survivor, an incredible spirit, and just such a caring person. But she struggled with eating disorders for about 10 years of her life, thankfully has healed herself from them, and is now dedicated her entire life's work to helping others find resources and healing in them as well. So we kind of talk a little bit about Scout and my background in with eating disorders. Both of us thankfully have never been diagnosed, but obviously if you are a woman in the world, you probably have an interesting relationship or complicated relationship to food, to eating, to body image, which all ties into this exact topic.
Yeah, it was a really, really poignant conversation, not only about her experience with eating disorders and healing and recovery, but also some things that we could do to prevent falling. Or I'm always really wary when we're talking about mental health, the verbiage that I use, but we talked a lot about preventative measures that one can take to establish a strong relationship with yourself, your body image, and your food, so that you don't fall into eating disordered patterns that then relinquish control over your life. So there's a lot of really great things that all of us can apply, whether or not we have eating disorders or not, as Mad said, as just women's in this society. So we hope you enjoy. We were really, really honored to have this conversation and hold space for this topic. And if you are interested, everything she talks about, there are links in the show notes to get involved with her alliance. There is a lot of support groups that she offers. And for those of you that are suffering with eating and are nervous to join a support group, I can personally vouch that support groups are one of the main ways I believe you heal in the beginning. That's where I started with my healing. And you don't have to say anything. Just show up, go, listen, and you'll talk when it's the right time for you. But they do have a lot of resources for those who are struggling. We definitely recommend you reach out and use Joanna as an amazing resource for all of this. So enjoy, sisters, and we love you.
We love you. Hi, Joanna. How are you?
Doing good. Just got home and so thrilled to be here.
Where is home?
Home is in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I just got back from the office and I was trying to corral my 4-year-old little girl into, you know, doing some iPad. We love the screen when we need it. So
doing some iPad. I love that. It's like, just figure it out. Here you go.
There's like tummy time and there's iPad time.
I mean, you know what? I used to be one of those people that would like give folks like the shit face. Like when I go to restaurants and see like little kids on phones, be like, oh my God, I'm never going to be that person. I'm totally that person.
I mean, how could you not be? Like, I am the same way. Like, I'm like, oh my God, how could you? But then I bet you when I'm a mom, like I'm going to give that little kid anything to just shut up for a second.
I'm telling you, like Steve Jobs is definitely on my list of prayers. Like whenever I choose to do that, I'm like, thank you. So
that's so funny. So I'm not a mom, but there's like this running joke in my family that I tell my in-laws. I'm like, when I get pregnant and you buy me shit, if you buy me anything that is a primary color, it's going in the trash. And so there's this whole thing. My family's like, well, don't they need to develop like the colors in their eyes or whatever? I'm like, she'll fucking see red somewhere. Like I'll point it out when we're outside. And then there's this meme of this mom who's like in this super neutral house, just like mine. And she's like all dolled up and she's like, there's no primary color toys in this house. And then it's like her like all fucked up with all these primary gross toys everywhere. That's like going to be me.
Everything I said I would never do. Like I very much believe in like, you know, like bashing gender norms. And like if my kid, whatever you identify as, that's great. Like, literally like every night we read about like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and like read like all the Clinton books. And then the next morning she's like, mommy, I really want to read like the Disney princess books. And I'm like, fuck, like, I'm like, this is not working. So
yeah, you're just like, okay, fine. I don't
know. Do the best you can. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and so,
I love that. I love that. Well, we are so excited that you are here,
Same.
That you took time out of your incredibly busy life as a mom
Thank you. Founder
and entrepreneur. And we have so much to talk to you about, especially about eating disorders. You know, we've never really touched on that subject on our podcast. So this is going to be a really informative conversation. And I think
Awesome. Extremely
helpful for a lot of listeners.
Awesome.
Before we start all that, let's do a round of current fixations because we always love to be currently fixated on things. So Scout, why don't you start?
Okay, so in the progression of OK Sis, we talk a lot about skincare, and I have very proudly gone from a 2-step Cetaphil routine to an entire ridiculously expensive line that I need to now upkeep. But in that process of figuring out skincare and the products that I like, it started dawning on me that I really wanted to prioritize clean beauty. And so I have been, you know, I think I have one product that's not clean in my skincare routine right now, which I'm really, really happy about. But the next step is my makeup. And so Mads and I aren't makeup people. Like, we don't know what to do with it. It's a very natural situation. I never wear it. But I ran out of my Bare Minerals tinted moisturizer. And a friend of mine, Leah Kirpalani, who owns ShopGood here in San Diego, she said, you know, when it comes to clean beauty, like, don't run out and replace everything. It's going to be very overwhelming. But when you get, you know, when you're out of one product, replace it with a clean product. So my tint and moisturizer was coming to an end, and like, love Bare Minerals. It's a great fucking tint and moisturizer, but I needed a new one. And I was getting targeted added on Instagram,
as we do.
Yeah. And I saw Ilia. So Ilia is a very clean beauty brand, and surprise, surprise, Shopgood has it, which is a store in San Diego. So I went in and like weirdly tried it on my forehead because of COVID. I had my mask on. And it's so great. It's a different texture, I'll say, than I think most tinted moisturizers are, because it doesn't have all that crap in it, but it just provides, I love the brand so much. It just provides such effortless, minimalistic, natural, clean beauty. And so I've just become obsessed with the brand, and I can't wait to expand into other products with them.
Wow. That was such a glowing review. And honestly, I'm in the market for a tinted moisturizer, so I'm going to check it out.
Well, maybe for once, you'll be influenced by me.
It's funny that you say that, Scout, because my current fixation is actually something that you notified me of, which is wild that I didn't know about this.
Is it praying to God? No. Is it praying to God? Okay. Just wondering.
No. What? Welcome, Joanna.
I think I found my people. That's all I can say.
Okay. So my current fixation is Bling Empire. Who is anyone watching this?
Me.
Okay, so Joanna, you're just in for a treat. So this is a Netflix show that is centered around these very, very affluent Asians in Los Angeles. And it's like Selling Sunset meets Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh my God.
Like the perfect blend of these two iconic models on Netflix. And there's just this burgeoning community that is so luxurious, so extravagant, that I just had no awareness of in Los Angeles. And I can't even explain to you how, you know, it's just such a good show to, at the end of the day, you need to turn off. I've just been in this mode where I'm like, I just need like a, just something to just, the brain has to just go to zero. And this is it, guys. Like,
also, don't you think, Mads, like the Real Housewives franchise, which I don't really watch, they were targeted towards us as wealthy people, but like,
oh no,
they're not.
No, no, no.
The wealth is not, but in Bling Empire, I mean, they're dropping like 20K on nothing.
The wealth in this show is unparalleled. It is unparalleled.
I'm so excited.
Oh, Joanna, you're going to freak out. You're going to freak out. So I would highly recommend, everyone needs to watch this show. And it's very much like the talk of the town. I'm always into like the monoculture of what is going on in like the TV land and what everyone is talking about. And this is it. So everyone check out Bling Empire.
I love it.
Okay. Love it. All right, Joanna, what is your current fixation?
Okay, I'm a little bit embarrassed, but I will tell you that I'm totally obsessed with Cobra Kai. And I don't know if any of y'all have watched it. I am not with that show. It's terrible, terrible, and unflippin' amazing at the same time. So I grew up loving Karate Kid. Like, I thought that Ralph Macchio and I were gonna get married. Like, it was a thing. Clearly, I like grew up and like, you know. But then like about like 4 months ago, I discovered Cobra Kai, which takes place like in current day with all the characters from Karate Kid, the first one. And it is remarkably bad and phenomenal to watch. And so they just dropped the third season, I think it was, at the beginning of the year. And it's been literally, I mean, I feel like the last 2 weeks, I'm very heavily involved in advocacy. I do a lot of work on Capitol Hill. And like, the last 2 weeks have just like been decimating. And like, you know, yesterday, thank goodness. And like, but Cobra Kai has gotten me through it. And if you have not watched it, it's just, you have to watch it.
The best thing about that, weirdly, I am like the content queen and I don't even know what you're talking about, which is crazy for me. And I'm so excited because I've been looking for a new show. So this is perfect. And then second, I love how remarkably bad is actually like a good thing. It's like
amazing.
What I'm looking for.
Yes. Yes.
No, I'm going to go on a limb and say that Mads is not going to enjoy Cobra Kai. Mads, we kind of missed the Karate Kid movement because our mom only let us watch Disney, but my husband is so obsessed with Cobra Kai. He watches it non-fucking stop. He makes the whole family watch it, and you put it on, and the two main characters, it is so bad.
Oh, God.
It is so bad.
It's so bad, but like, the music is all 80s like music. It makes my heart sing. And I have to tell you, like, all day working with what I do. And like, you know, I could also say like my fixation is still like, you know, going back and listening to like Jamila Jamil and Brene Brown right now, because they literally have been giving me life the last like year of like this pandemic. But like, the end of the day, like when your brain needs to just shut off and you just need to watch like, you know, bubblegum for your brain, like, yeah. It's awesome.
I'm so happy you said that. My husband's going to be so stoked. I'm going to let him know because he's just been binging it. He thinks I'm going to watch it and I'm not.
Yeah.
I can't do it. But I also don't really remember Karate Kid, so it doesn't have that like nostalgic pull for me. But okay, this is amazing because you kind of alluded a little bit to all of the things that you do. And that is that you are the founder and CEO of the Alliance for Eating Disorders Awareness. And you had a 10-year-long battle with a variety of eating disorders. Now, I was really, I don't know if the right word is excited, but I was really passionate about having this conversation because Mads and I, quote unquote, have not suffered or dealt with, and you can tell me the right terminology that is the most appropriate here, with eating disorders. However, I will say that I think that in the eating disorder community, I really want to talk to you a lot about like prevention. And because women have, you know, I posted a story that I gained weight because I went off medication and I was feeling uncomfortable in my body. And I posted it on Instagram, and like the DMs that came in from women, it's just incredible. And so I think that there's a lot of sisters in our community here that are going to really value from hearing your story. So I would personally be honored if you would feel comfortable talking to us about your personal story. And how you have gone through recovery and healing yourself.
Sure, absolutely. And can I just say how truly excited I am to be here and to share this space and this time with all of you. And really, I just feel very honored to be able to reach out to your amazing community. I talk about a topic that people don't genuinely or oftentimes like to have conversations around, because eating disorders are still one of those things that are, you know, shrouded in secrecy and like, you know, really embedded in stigma. And so thank you for allowing me to have this space and this opportunity. So, you know, eating disorders, which is a common misconception, is not a disorder of choice. It's not like people wake up one day, look out the window, say it's a beautiful day in Palm Beach, Florida, I think I'm going to have anorexia nervosa today. They're actually like significant mental illness. They're biopsychosocial illnesses, means that about 60 to 80% of the cause of eating disorders is actually genetic. And like the environment sort of pulls that proverbial like trigger. And for me, like if you look at my life, it's really, really crazy that, you know, eating disorders ran in my family. My mother was one of seven children, three brothers, three sisters, and her, and two of her sisters had eating disorders. Now, they grew up at a time where they didn't have a definition of eating disorders. They weren't even diagnosed at that time. And they lived in France. I lived here in Florida. And so it's not like I was even around them. So it wasn't like a learned behavior. My dad has one sister and she had an eating disorder as well. So definitely as far as genes, like I was completely and utterly screwed. I am a child of a Holocaust survivor. So I definitely have dealt with some transgenerational trauma. My dad narrowly escaped Auschwitz. My whole entire, like his whole entire family passed away, was put into hiding. And so that definitely made him become who he was, you know, very much, very feelings abstinent, like never told me that he loved me, like nothing was ever good enough. Like when my parents had me, they wanted me to be everything that they never had the opportunity to be. And so there was a lot of pressure. My father also deals with obsessive compulsive disorder. And because of that, thank you, Dad, I also got that as well. So, you know, I think so that part was really significant in the development of my story. And then the other piece is that I've been struggling with anxiety my whole life. I don't remember a time where I didn't have that feeling. Like, even as like a little kid, the best way I could describe it is like, I was that little kid that would hide behind my mom's legs and like never felt good enough and thought that if I did enough for other people, then they would like me and then everything would be okay. At the age of 3, I started dancing. And by the time I was 10, I was on a pretty professional track. I started going to New York every summer and I danced at School of American Ballet. And I really remember significantly the summer between 6th and 7th grade. So I was around 11 and a half at that time. I came home from being away in New York and I was in this class with other girls who were about 3 to 4 years older than me. And the artistic director of the professional company, we were at the school, came in and said, "We want you all to audition to dance in the corps de ballet for the Nutcracker, so Snowflakes and Flowers. The only thing is that we want you all to lose X amount of pounds before the audition." And I was young, I was prepubescent, I did not need to lose weight. However, I had that athletic, win at every cost, perfectionistic, like if you tell me to jump off the second story of this building, I probably would do the same if that means like succeeding. And so I remember that conversation like it was yesterday. I got into the car, my mom picked me up and I looked at her and I said, "Mom, I'm gonna go on a healthy food diet." Because at that time, and this is gonna show my age, it was the late 80s and you know, Snackwells was taking over the world. Everything was fat-free at the time. And I told her, "I wanna eat, you know, fruits and vegetables and eat healthy." And at the time I didn't, I ate a lot of junk. And I didn't really like vegetables. And so as a parent, now being a parent now, when I said to my mom, "I want to eat healthfully," she was like, "Excellent, that's great." And you know, for a majority of people that don't have the genetic influences and don't have the co-occurring comorbid anxiety and depression, like that's fine. When you look at what 95% of the US population is on a diet at some point, you know? And so I remember distinctly, that's how it started. Like I just was gonna watch what I was gonna eat, exercise a little bit more, but I really wasn't committed. Unfortunately, several months later when we auditioned, much to my dismay, I was the only one out of 15 girls that didn't get the part. And they pulled me aside and they very clearly said, "Joanna, the reason why you didn't get the part is not because you're not a good dancer, it's because you look so young." And that was the first time I had that nasty game of telephone happen to me where I know they said that, but what I heard internally was, "You didn't get the part because you're too big." And I really thought because he had emphasized so much weight loss that was it. And they were just being nice. And if you have any listeners out there that were professional dancers or grew up in the dance world, like they're not that nice. Dance teachers are not that nice. And if you are, thank you. And if you have a nice dance teacher, good for you. Not my story. but that's really how it started. In that moment, I remember thinking, "I'm gonna do better." Mm-hmm. And again, I didn't choose to have an eating disorder on that day. I just really wanted to do better. And you know, for me, that phrase, "the path to hell is filled with good intentions," is so appropriate for individuals that experience eating disorders. They think that what they're doing is going to better themselves. And for me, a diet turned into an almost deadly 10-year struggle with my eating disorder.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack here. One, you know, Scout mentioned in the beginning that we fortunately have never been diagnosed mm-hmm. with an eating disorder. That being said, and there is, I'm glad you kind of brought out the genetic part of it versus the societal part. It's mm-hmm. very interesting, your past with being first generation of a Holocaust survivor. Our stepdad and our mom are very big in the Holocaust education world. So we know a lot about what it means to be a first generation of that trauma. But then there's this societal part where that's kind of what I wanted to touch on. You know, although I was never diagnosed with anorexia or bulimia, and you can also let us know what other forms there are, because those are probably the most common. But I remember, you know, being in middle school and my two best friends were very, very thin and very, as in like didn't have to do anything. We're just so skinny. Never worked out, ate everything imaginable. I am not built that way. I was always a little chubby growing up, and I thought that they were the right body. And that was the first memory I have of understanding that maybe skinny was superior in societal's vision of what beauty is. And I spent years not eating and working out when I was like 11. Like, I would run miles, I would swim laps. It was absurd. And every woman, even hearing this, if you're not even diagnosed with an eating disorder, has experienced difficulty and challenges around body image and around what we are intaking. And it's so toxic, and it's this insane burden day in and day out to be thinking about, you know, just how we can present ourselves as like better to others. Like, why is it so about the external perception? Like, why can't we have grown up with like just being okay with ourselves and our natural bodies? Mm-hmm. Why isn't that enough? And
Mads, I remember very specifically, and I can take this out if it's too personal, but I remember you were in eighth grade and you were crying because you finally hit the weight of your best friends. And you were crying to me and you said, I'm actually skinnier than her and nobody cares.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really hard moment for me to see that. But I think we all have levels. Like, I made myself throw up for like 6 months, but it was because I was bipolar and so I just needed something to control. So it wasn't really about food or eating for me. It was just like something to like track. Mm-hmm. So anyways, yeah.
I'm so happy. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have to say the fact that both of you just disclosed so beautifully, and thank you for that. And I think that shows tremendous vulnerability. And I think that's what makes like your listeners connect to you, and also to say me too. And that's exactly why I started the Alliance. And I will tell you, like, Scout, what you just said about eating disorders, about, you know, purging, it's eating disorders are not about the food. They've never been about the food. And I know that the damn word eating is in eating disorders, but, you know, if you think about, and you talked about control, right? It's that, you know, the world seems so out of control. The one thing that I can control is what I put in me, or in your case, like get rid of, right? And you're so right, like, about, you know, the societal's pressure of these bullshit standards, excuse my language. Like, there are so many folks that live life in higher weight bodies that are absolutely healthy, and that, you know, our society deems them overweight, or that that bullshit O word, obese, that's just so derogatory and so weight and so stigmatizing. And the truth of the matter is that we're not supposed to all come in one specific size or shape. However, with all these influences that we hear, and, you know, I've spent a lot of time in this field, and one of the things like that I love and I hate about social media is I love the fact that, you know, it just brings people together. You can have communities, you don't feel so alone. At the same time, you know, we've known for a very long time that the mass media, like, you know, advertisements, magazines, television, are huge like perpetrators of these unrealistic images. Well, we also know now too that social media is even worse. And the reason why is that it's a lot more accessible. We're on it all the time. And yes, we do follow, you know, celebrities and influencers, but the majority of people that come up on your feed a lot are people in your close circle. And because you know them, you view them as more credible, as, okay, well, I know that this image has been photoshopped to be on this cover of the magazine. And let's be real, like, you don't put one picture, you like take 57 pictures, you look for the picture that you look the best, you have like 26 filters on it, and it's typically you doing something really great, you know? And so, and then like we wait and we take a look at how many likes, how many shares, like, and so we're seeing all these mental health issues that are coming out of, and these body image influences that are coming out of like social media. And like, we do live in a society, you know, and then I'll wrap this part up. That's extremely like weight phobic, weight stigmatizing, you know, and the majority of people that experience eating disorders live in higher weight bodies. They're not that archaic, stereotypical young girl. It's folks of all shapes and sizes, all ages, all races, all sexual orientations, like all genders. Like, and so I think because we have this idea of what eating disorders are and who develops them, it's very limiting, and it often causes people to not access care when they really do need it.
I want to talk about preventative care, and I want to be very careful about the way I say that, mm-hmm. because I think there's two separate, you know, simplifying it mm-hmm. a lot mm-hmm. here. There's the what can women do who are predisposed to genetically having an eating disorder? How can they take care of their mental health so that when that door opens, when that trigger happens, mm-hmm. They can potentially be self-aware enough to prevent that? And then the second camp is what can just women do to practice more self-acceptance when it comes to their bodies so that they don't turn like what me and Mads did, which like we wouldn't consider clinical eating disorders, but like women shouldn't do that. Right. Like that shouldn't be a thing that's a part of like fucking all of our stories. Exactly. So what are some preventative healing things mm-hmm. that women can do to help maintain that self-love or that self-awareness?
I think that's such a great question. You know, first and foremost, I want to definitely say to anybody who's listening, genetics do not determine if it will happen or not. Like you might be genetically predisposed and you'll never experience an eating disorder. And that's like with everything, right? The one thing is that I will tell you, I'm a really big believer in accountability, meaning that I believe that therapy is incredible. I think that, in my opinion, I think everyone should be in therapy. Eating disorders. Yeah, eating disorders and like disordered body image and all of that, those are maladaptive coping mechanisms. It's what we've latched onto to deal with something going on in our life. And I've been lucky enough to sit at some pretty extraordinary tables in my life. And one of them is I'm a member of the ISMIC, which is the Interdepartmental Serious Mental Illness Coordinating Committee. It's a government committee. And I was on a call a few weeks ago with them, and they said that historically 1 in 4 Americans have some sort of mental illness. And since the pandemic has happened, we're looking at 1 in 3. And the reason why I bring that up is to go back to your prevention of, I think that for so long, mental health has been treated differently than physical health. Like we go to the doctor for a physical, if you're female identifying, you go to the gynecologist, you do all of these things. And yet mental health is sort of left on the back burner. And I think it's because it's above the neck. We're like, it's not really necessary. So I think that if you start noticing that things are starting to flare up or you're getting very anxious or your bouts of depression, don't hold back, reach out for help. See a therapist, because so often all of that stuff permeates from that root cause. So, you know, definitely doing that. Number two is watch who you're following on social media. Like that's a big thing for me. Like if you're following someone and they make you feel bad about yourself, unfollow them. Like, and I know that sounds really silly, but like if you're like getting off of Instagram feeling like total and complete shit, like you need to start curating your feed, truthfully.
Yeah, we're huge advocates of the unfollow method. Yeah. Like if it's not serving you, you do not need to see it. You literally engineer what you look at on Instagram.
1,000,000%, you know, and that is also like stepping away from diet culture. You know, I'm very much a believer in what's considered health at every size, which is that there is health at every size. And I don't believe in diets. Like, you know, obviously some folks have to eat a certain way because they, you know, they have certain allergies or they have some certain intolerances. I'm not talking about that, but like, you know, I believe that all foods are good foods. For me, I got into a trap when I started labeling this is good for me and this is bad for me, because innately, just like that, my 4-year-old little girl, or like when we were kids, like when we're told not to do something, we end up wanting to do it. And the number one behavior that leads to binging is restricting, sort of telling yourself you can't, you can't, you can't, and then you let yourself have it and you overeat or overhave. And then that gets into that shame spiral. I cannot believe that I did that. I need to punish myself. I need to work out. And that's also a big part, is that, you know, moving your body should not be punitive. Like, working out is fantastic, but you're not working out so that you can have that second helping of this or that. You're moving your body to maintain health. So for me, those are definitely things that I would just like share with people, that like really examine the source. Like, if it's starting to feel just a little overwhelming, it's okay to talk about it, and it's okay to reach out to people.
Yeah, the shame spiral is something I definitely relate to. And I also, if I look back historically on patterns that I have, I am definitely a binge eater and then shame myself and not eat, but like eat very clean for a week. And I'm trying to, obviously it's a balance, right? And it's just what makes you feel good in the moment. You know, on a Friday night, sorry, I want to eat a pizza and I want to have a bottle of wine. And that is that. I do it once a week or maybe twice a week. But then again, it's like I shouldn't be shaming. I should be understanding that this is just what my body needs in this moment. And there will be days where I eat very clean and that feels so good as well. So it's just this like – It definitely, you need to catch yourself in the moment. And I think we talk about this a lot with just even just uncomfortable emotions in general. When you find yourself falling back into it, examining it and coming at it with a sense of curiosity rather than judgment, and just saying, okay, interesting, this is a pattern of mine. That's great. Let me just become aware. Do I want to shift it? Do I want to maintain it? What do I want to do about this? Does it make me feel good or bad? Rather than like punishing yourself. And I think a lot of women find themselves, yes, in that shame spiral.
Yep.
Yeah. For me, I've started to reestablish my relationship with food as really looking at it as the thing that nourishes me. And so I'm actually kind of starting to get really interested in the benefits of different foods. So and just eating more vegetables constantly, just because it makes me physically feel good. And then, yeah, like have the pizza, have the ramen, what have you be it. But for me, my main thing with food is that I overeat when I'm emotionally uncomfortable. And so the shame for me was, oh, I just like ate a bunch of cookies, or, oh, I had like two things of cereal. I could have just had one. For me, it's not, as you said, like not about the food in those moments. Like I like, after I did it today, I was like anxious and I ate something and I said, you know what? After I ate it, I just checked in. I said, my body wasn't asking me for that. Like I wasn't actually hungry. I ate that because I was anxious. And I said, you know what? Next time I'm going to give my mind what it needs. I'm not going to black it out with something else. And so it's just like, it's so individualized for each person, but I think looking at food as nutrition and, yeah, like fuel and love is such a more beautiful way, in my opinion.
I have a question it relates to that. You know, what do you find is a good mechanism for eating for boredom? Because I fall into that a lot, and I wonder if, again, I think it ties into all of this about the psychology of eating and this, but why do we do that, and what can we replace it with?
Yeah, I think that's such a really great question. You know, I use this example a lot. You know, it's oftentimes, you know, when you're either bored or stressed or anxious, like you find yourself like walking into the kitchen and you open up the refrigerator and you're looking and you're like, you're lucky enough to not have to deal with food deprivation. You have a refrigerator full of food and it's like, okay, but there's nothing to eat. So you close the refrigerator and you go over the cupboard or the pantry and you open up the pantry and you're like, again, lucky enough to have food. And you're like, there's really nothing that I want. And it really comes down to, you're not hungry. You're bored. You're anxious. You're lonely. And so what I like to tend to do is like really try to do this intuitive eating. Like, am I hungry? Do I need to feed myself? And when I'm full, like not to overdo it, because I think that we just have gotten into this place of, you know, you go to a year ago, you would go to a restaurant and like, you know, some portions are astronomically big and you would, you know, eat and you would be satiated. And because the food was still in front of you, you would pick up your fork and continue, and it just because it was there. And so, you know, one of the things that I learned through intuitive eating was to really like check in with myself, because intuitive eating is biologically based eating. It's like what babies do, you know, like when they're first born, like they'll take bottle or breast or whatever it is. And when they're done, they push it away because they literally can listen to their hunger and their satiety. But we have been conditioned not to, because we are, like in your word, Scout, we are emotional eaters. And so for me, when I'm like, I'm hungry and I'm like, I'm on the couch and like, I just had dinner, I technically shouldn't be hungry. I may be hungry. And so let me feed myself, but it might just be, so then I'm like, all right, what do I need to do? Should I check in with myself? Like you were saying, like, do I maybe want to like go for a walk? Do I want to like read something? Do I want to journal? Do I want to do any of those things? And then after that, like if I'm still feeling hungry, then I'm maybe physiologically hungry and that's okay to eat. But I think checking in with yourself is such a big thing. And to remember to not shame yourself if you've had dinner and you're still a little bit like still physiologically hungry, take care of yourself. Like, I love that you're saying that food is like, food is fuel, food is nourishment, and all foods fit. I really do believe that. They all serve a purpose. And when we start shaming ourselves and, you know, berating ourselves for what we did, it just sets us up to weaponize food and then to use it against ourselves in the future.
What would you say to yourself? Because eating disorders, in my mind-ish, kind of, this is probably incorrect, is kind of similar to the time frame of drug and alcohol addiction, and that you like go through recovery. I feel like similar verbiage is used, or you relapse. I don't know if you relate to that verbiage. My husband's sober, so I'm very familiar with the recovery community. So what would you say to yourself when you were in the thick of it, now standing here, having walked through your healing, understanding that healing is cyclical and ever, ever changing and growing? But what is one thing that you would want to say to yourself in like the deepest moment of your eating disorder?
So, you know, so much of the journey to recovery from an eating disorder is very similar to healing from other addictions. The one thing that I will just share is that with substance use, with alcoholism, with gambling, with any of those addictions, it's an abstinence-based recovery. You sever ties with your proverbial drug of choice. With food, you just can't do that. So instead of a abstinence-based recovery, it's more of a balanced and moderative recovery. And so basically, like, you're having to deal with your quote unquote drug of choice 3 to 6 times a day, every day. What I would say to myself, number one, is I had this belief system that many individuals with eating disorders have, that I was the exception to the rule, that I didn't deserve to recover, that I would never recover. And so what I say to people all the time, and I'm sure you've picked up on this, but I'm like a bull in a china cabinet. I speak my mind. I don't sugarcoat shit. And I just look at them and I'm like, what makes you so damn special? And I do mean that with so much love, that the essence, the one thing that we deserve to be, you know, to take care of self, to be healthy, but you're not the exception to the rule, period, end of story. That recovery, that an experience with an eating disorder, struggling with an eating disorder is hell. Like, it's pure hell. And I came very close to losing my life several times. And, you know, eating disorders have a very high mortality rate. I mean, every 52 minutes, someone in this country, dies as a direct result of their eating disorder. So they're very lethal. They're very serious. And there is recovery. There is hope. There is help. And I come from the school of thought in the eating disorder community. I consider myself recovered. Now, I'm not cured because I still have those genetics and I still experience anxiety, but I live my life beyond my eating disorder. And I've been recovered for about 21, 22 years now. And I never thought that would ever be my story. And I will tell you, like, the teams that help me recover, whenever they find out what I'm doing now, they're like, really? You? Are you sure? Like, that's what you do? And so if someone's out there listening that's in the midst of an eating disorder, I really hope that you hear that you are not the exception to the rule, that recovery is possible, that my journey to recovery, my recovery was the hardest thing I ever did, It's also the best thing I ever did, because my best day in my eating disorder pales into comparison of my worst day in recovery, because my life, although it's opposite of everything I always thought it would be, is extraordinarily imperfect and messy and amazing. I was told for 20 years that I would never be able to have a kid because of all of the side effects of my eating disorder. And 4 years ago, I gave birth to an amazing little girl. And every time I look in her eyes, and she's got these super big blue eyes, my husband has blue eyes, I, for a moment, like I am so grateful that I like white knuckled it through hell and back to get to this moment. So you're seen and you're heard and you're not alone, and recovery is possible. That's what I would say.
What, there's something you said, I mean, first mazel tov on so many levels, mm-hmm. but there's something you said that really resonated with me. And I posted this on Instagram. I said something like, after 8 years of dealing with a diagnosis of bipolar, I woke up one day and realized I wasn't special. I was just human.
Yep.
And I think that people who go through mental illness related situations do think they're very special for some reason. And they're not in the most beautiful human yep. way. They're just not. You're right. You're not the fucking exception. And you believing that is killing yourself. Yep. So
you're here. Thank you for saying that.
It doesn't serve you. Yeah, it doesn't serve you. Oh God.
Wow,
that was great.
Okay, so I want to transition a little bit because February is National Eating Disorder Awareness Month, and this episode is coming out a week before February. So
awesome.
We want to allow you to give us some resources, sure. especially things that you, programs or workshops or things that you're doing within the Alliance that our mm-hmm. listeners can be a part of, can look to for help. What do you guys have planned for February?
I'm so excited about, so February is typically, you know, the end of February is typically Eating Disorders Awareness Week, but because I can't do anything small, I'm like, let's name it the whole month. Like, why not? So we're actually doing this amazing virtual 3-day event the last weekend of February called Not One More Weekend. And it's based on our three pillars at our organization, which is help, support, and recovery. And so on February 26th is our National Day of Help, where we're asking folks to pick up the phone because stigma is really the deterrent of people getting help. So stop living in silence. Stop, you know, doing this on your own. We're never meant to do this on our own. We're not supposed to do this on your own. Pick up, call the Alliance. We can connect you to any level of care wherever you are in the country. Saturday is our National Day of Recovery, and we are actually going to do a 16-hour support group marathon from 8 a.m. all the way to midnight. Every hour on the hour, there's going to be different support groups for individuals that are struggling with recovery, that are in the LGBTQ community, that might have a dual diagnosis of eating disorders and substance use, because there's a 50% co-occurrence. So 50% of individuals with eating disorders also have a substance use disorder because, again, it's that maladaptive coping mechanism. And they're all therapist-led. There's going to be some amazing groups, and anyone across the globe can hop on at any time and get support wherever they are. And then Sunday is our National Day of Recovery, where we're going to urge people to live their life beyond their eating disorder. So to get out there, you know, smash the stereotypes, smash the stigma, like change their pictures on Instagram, on Facebook, share messages about eating disorder recovery, reach out to their members of Congress and ask them to support eating disorder legislation. And at the end of the day at 6:00 p.m., we're going to do this amazing rally for recovery. And you are the first to know that our main speaker is the fabulous Hunter McGrady, who was the first plus size model to grace the cover of Sports Illustrated swimsuit. She also has an inclusive and amazing clothing line that goes from extra small to 6X on QVC called All Worthy. We have an amazing mom, Kitty Weston, who lost her daughter, Anna, 20 years ago and has been integral in passing legislation. And just a really like effing cool, like 45 minutes where people and loved ones can all come together and say, not one more, like not one more life taken, not one more moment stolen to this insidious disease. So folks can learn all about it. It is a free weekend. We never want cost to be a barrier. At our website, or we actually have a special event website, notonemore.co, and not com, co. We're not going to get anywhere with com. but I also want to let your listeners know that the Alliance is here to support you. We have free clinician-led virtual support groups every week, numerous times a week. We do connect people to all levels of care across the country. And more than anything, we're there to help folks navigate this really difficult journey and let them know that they're not alone.
Oh, that is so amazing. And thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you.
And this community that you've brought up. I know probably a lot of our listeners are relating to a lot of what we have just discussed. And if any of this is sparking something for you, please reach out. It's not, there's no shame at all in reaching out. Scout, do you want to ask our last question?
I do, but first, also sisters, their branding is really cute on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
Because we love good branding.
We don't bring anyone we don't bring anyone on OK Sis that doesn't have cute branding.
Thank you. I very much appreciate that. We have an amazing team that we work with, and they're just so brilliant and so amazing. But definitely check them out. Check us out. We're at Alliance for EDA. So give us a follow.
And we'll have the links in the show notes for the event and all that good stuff too, for so they can easily find it. But we ask all of our guests this at the end of the interview. If you could brag about one thing and don't be humble, what would you brag about?
I think, and this feels really uncomfortable because I'm the last person to like toot my horn, and I will step up to the plate.
That's why we ask this, because we know everyone is uncomfortable, but we are forcing you to be
okay.
To be proud of yourself.
I think it would be my work in federal policy that I'm most proud of. I was integral in the passing of the first ever eating disorder legislation in the history of our country, and I've been able to meet with two administrations. One was definitely more exciting than the other. I'm just going to leave it there.
He who should not be named.
Yes, however, he has become the Florida man now and lives 5 minutes away from me, so just saying. But moving on to that, and I'm really super excited. I've had the opportunity to meet with our now fierce and fabulous vice president, and I'm really excited at the possibilities of being able to work with her on helping to implement major policy change. And I think for me, what means the world for my policy work is that for over 10 years, I felt like I didn't have a voice, or that nobody cared if I was alive or not. And what my work with like advocacy and policy has allowed me to grow into my voice and realize that my voice matters, and all of each and every one of our voices matter. So, yeah.
Beautiful. We love that so much. Thank you so much for coming on. This was so informative and inspiring. And sisters, you can follow us at OK Sis Podcast. Love you.
Love you.